known that heats can decay to dark sector particles, and this decay could potentially hide or complicate its discovery of those. And at the same time, many people noticed that you can use complementary constraints from if it decays to dark matter, you can use complementary constraints from direct detection and possibly exclude this possibility of invisibly decaying Higgs. And I'd like to ask a question: how generic this conclusion really is, and if it gets modified if we step away from the most minimal model. And the other thing that sort of interests me and going to talk about that as well is that we call this direct detection dark matter experiments, and they surely have these capabilities, but if you see the signal, is it, and you're sure for some, I mean, if you can make sure that this is not a background, can you actually make a case that it's coming from the WIMPs, or maybe coming causing by, maybe it's caused by some other type of new physics, and I'm going to mention one type of new physics that is not immediately ruled out. So, basically, that's one of my thoughts. I thought I would open up with some historic comments, because we are kind of 100 years since the discovery of the atomic nucleus, and Rutherford and his students, within 5 years since the discovery of the nucleus, they already knew most of the Z and A's for all the isotopes and so on. And there was a first dark matter problem appeared at that time, because A was larger than Z, and also by integer amounts. So it was a question, where does this extra mass come from? And Rutherford himself thought that, well, maybe inside the nucleus there are tightly packed protons and electrons, and that sort of gives the right amount of mass. But that was disproven very quickly, because you can show that in that model, carbon 13 will have an integer spin, and that was not consistent with the hyperfine measurements at that time. So that some theorists speculated there will be a new neutral particle strongly interacting, spin one half, sort of crazy thing. But here it was, and it was discovered in the same alpha N reaction that Juan is most not pleased with. So the first dark matter was discovered through the reaction that may kill the discovery of the second dark matter.
Anyway. So who floated that well, that theoretical suggestion?
I know of one paper by Bartzman and Ivanenko in around 1930. That's the paper I heard of, but I don't know if there were some other suggestions. Right?
1930 or
1913? 1913. Oh, 13, no. But it's interesting that 90% of the isotopes that we know today were already known around 1925, sort of all isotopes. So that was the resolution to the first dark matter problem. All right, so now I'd like to talk a little bit about the WIMPs, and we kind of get used to this picture that the main input is the annihilation rate, and we kind of think that the dark matter states annihilate into the standard model states, and you could naively think that you can, well, take standard model states and produce a dark matter with a similar cross section, and if you put this diagram on side, you have a very similar scale for the cross section for the scattering. But of course, there is a 2-to-2 logic behind all this picture, and some past Neil and Doug and I, with Ritz and Molushin, have pointed out that in principle you're going to have a more complicated picture of, say, dark matter annihilating to mediators that are almost semi-stable or decaying much later, in which case you can really have a large annihilation cross-section, but nothing for the direct detection or the collider signatures. So there is varieties of WIMPs. This is like, if you like the conventional WIMP, where you have all three signatures This is like what I call subdued waves, where things go in stages with the relatively long mediators, and then you don't have these two types. And for this today's talks, I would like to look at the models where you, in principle, have a very strong collider signature, but don't have a strong direct detection. And the collider signature that I'm going to look at is Higgs decaying invisibly. So without this, so in 2000, Cliff and I and Tony Stavrodos wrote a paper on this scalar dark matter, and we didn't know that it was written like 7 years before by John McDonald, and he didn't know that it was written seven or 8 years before by Silvera and Z. So it's like multiple reruns of the same idea. So you basically say, well, let's take all new physics, someone heavier than the TV, or maybe quite a bit heavier than the TV. That's so far been very consistent, right? And then, so in that case, you take all the minimal model, some scalar, you couple it with called Higgs portal. You have like few free parameters, and once you sort of specify what the mass of the dark matter is, you can solve for the coupling through the abundance calculation. What's interesting in this model is that if your particles are lighter than the Higgs, then of course you have a strong depletion of the Higgs decay modes in the visible sector by its invisible width. So you can see that here, like, well, it's 100 GeV Higgs, and if you there's a plus from my own paper, and if you kind of go to the dark matter masses on the order of 20 GeV or so, you're going to have an order of magnitude suppression in the rates from the visible modes, which is of course very relevant for the attempts to discover Higgs at the LHC. Now, however, you can also look at the older plots and look at the 20 GeV region, and you can see that you're getting into the cross sections above 10 to the minus 43, which is, of course, very discoverable from the point of view of xenon 100, because that's the region that relatively sensitive to. And this is the statements that are being made in the recent literature is that not seeing the signals at xenon 100 makes the Higgs particle safe against the decays to dark matter, because it's a pesky signature. Nobody wants to do that search at the CMS or Atlas. This is not something that they would like to do. At the same time, if you suddenly discover Higgs with a significant missing branching fraction that you can make, in this minimal model, you can make a connection and predict what the direct scattering cross-section is. And, of course, this year we come very close to seeing the Higgs, and the sensitivity is very close to see the Higgs and start probing very interesting range below 150 GeV, where I should say that the Higgs is the most susceptible to the invisible branching, because its overall width is regulated by the Yukawa coupling of the big quark, which is small. So anything you add on top can be improved.
It's a little bit below that, right? Because once you really reach 150, you're starting to go to another
Yes. But it's very quickly changing, right? So for 130, it would be.
130.
Well, I was saying that the experiments reached 150, right? And they're pushing down. So, of course, a very important question is whether does the Higgs exist or not, right? Suppose in the eventuality that the experiment runs a little longer and closes all the stair model window for the Higgs, does it mean that the Higgs doesn't exist? That's a very strong assumption. So in these models, you may circumvent that, and you may need to start doing invisible Higgs decay searches. Anyways, our take is like there is a rigid link between the Higgs invisible width and dark direct detection, but it's in the consequence of the minimal model. Can we sort of tweak the models and look at them with a broader brush and sort of see if this connection survives, because it seems important. And so we have like two strategies for complicating things, really making it really complicated, or maybe just next to minimal complications. And we chose to go with this one. This might still be true, but at this point, this is the option I choose. So we sort of generalize the Higgs portal. So we have a Higgs, and at the normalizable level, we couple one or two scalars to it, and we also add a fermion, maybe a couple through the scalar. Through the scalar coupling, or pseudo scalar coupling. And we look for the models where this R parameter, this depletion of the Higgs width, is much smaller than one, but the sigma for direct detection is tiny. And we take the dark matter sort of below 50 or some sort of GV mark, in which case it's better to have it as a singlet, or at least it makes less problems for us, and that's partly the justification for looking for this portal. So we found a bunch of rather generic scenarios where the Higgs is decaying invisibly, fully invisibly, if you like, and to dark matter or the particle from the dark sector, and the direct scattering cross section is small. So if you take N as a scenario number one, if a pseudoscalar portal, if you can think of N as dark matter, and S as some mediator that is trilinearly coupled to the Higgs, this combination A times beta breaks CT, but it breaks CT in the dark sector, so it's not consequential for anything. You can calculate the annihilation cross section because of this pseudoscalar coupling. It proceeds in the S wave, and you can estimate that the lower level for this Lee-Weinberg window is around 20 GeV. That's where your coupling starts blowing up. But you can have that rather easily, and then your Higgs decays fully invisibly in that case. But then, of course, the scattering is occurring through this spin-dependent parameter for the dark matter, which vanishes in the limit of vanishing velocity. So you take a punishment of the velocity over c squared, which is 10 minus 6, and you fall below the
lambda. Is the lambda over there? Is that the same lambda?
No, this is an effective lambda, because you have the mixing of H with S, and that's an effect. So, and also the sorry for the mishap with the notations. This A over here, this is a number of newtons rather than the curve coupling. So this is an effective cross section, equivalent cross section per proton, because things are momentum dependent. You have to first calculate the scattering on the nucleus and then derive the effective sort of figure of merit. So this is a very scenario that is somewhat difficult, maybe not totally hopeless for indirect detection, because you have a few tens of GeV particles that are leading in the S wave, mostly in the deep quarks. That's possibly discoverable with Fermi. Another possibility is split limb, very analogous to inelastic limb model of Neil. And that's sort of we take two particles, basically two scalars. One is stronger coupled to the Higgs, but somewhat heavier than the lighter. And you can make this lighter one as dark matter and ensure its abundance is regulated by what's called the cone annihilation process. And for that, you just need the coupling between the two sectors to the Higgs to be at the level of 10 minus 3. And then, of course, all the direct detection is heavily suppressed. So you can think of that model as being consequence of one of these two scalars being strongly coupled to the Higgs, them being somewhat poles in mass, like 10%, and there would be some separate Z2 symmetries in both sectors, and the parameter that breaks the Z2 symmetries is somewhat smaller. Not, in that case, you get exactly that pattern. Then, so this is again the case where you can suppress direct detection by 10 to minus 6, and Higgs can still behave fully usable. Now, there is, of course, this older idea of secluded WIMPs. Here, I take n heavier than the mediator mass S. Particle n is dark matter, S is the mediator. Mediator decays through the mixing with the Higgs due to a very, very small coupling here. And then the Higgs will decay to the mediators because this coupling lambda can be order one. And it's not constrained by dark matter. So it's depending then on the size of this A coupling, the Higgs can be either decaying fully invisibly or can be buried under the because this mediator particles can further fragment into deep waves. So, and the most depressing scenario of all is super WIMPs in the sense of super weakly interacting massive particles, which in that particular incarnation are really not interacting with regular matter at all. So this is like the scalar, a single scalar dark matter model, the most minimal version plus decaying to light lightish dark matter, and then you can see that you can push this coupling to be very, very small, and everything. So if this coupling would have been zero, S would be like the regular scalar dark matter through the Higgs particle, but because it decays at a later stage, to ends, basically have to rescale the couplings. And, but in any case, yeah, you can have basically the Higgs decaying to mediators, which fly away and somewhere, God knows where, decay to pairs of dark matter particles. So you have the Higgs decaying to four dark matter particles, and that can dominate easily the standard model with, and there is no direct detection signal here. So we also looked at the SUSY portals, and you can write down the NMSSM type superpotential of that form, and playing with different choices of couplings and mass scales, you can fit all this suggestions that I had from previous scenarios. So that's basically the end of the first part of my talk, and the statements is that the rigid connection between the Higgs decaying to particles from the dark sector and direct detection doesn't survive the broadening of the models, even though the models that I written down are not really terribly complicated. So the conclusion is that, well, depending on what was happening at LHC, and as the luminosity goes up, the experimental collaborations would have to take, probably would have start taking the possibility of invisibly decaying Higgs more seriously and start doing searches of that. Okay, so now we come to the second part of my talk, and that's was basically the idea that was published, well, I put out a paper in March, and it's supposed to appear in PRD. And so this is the question is, if you have all these wonderful WIM detectors and you see that signature that is dark matter consistent, sort of, could it be the signature of something else? Does it have to be a dark matter? And over the years, people, including myself, looked at various different possibilities. The one that one mentioned that you can have a bosonic particle that is absorbed by electronic shells, and you have an electronic signal in your detector. You can have axions, emitted by the sun, and you also have an ionization signal from that. These are signatures that are easily, well, if you have sophisticated detectors that are specifically tuned to nuclear recall, then in principle, you could be able to distinguish that from the WIMs. But I'd like to get to the idea of neutrinos from the sun. Everyone knows that, it's a well-studied subject, neutrinos from the sun, and we think that we have a good understanding of what's going on. Of course, people have looked at what kind of backgrounds that would introduce into the direct detection sources, and the answer is not huge backgrounds, because the cross-sections are small. So the idea that I'm going to pursue for the rest of this talk is that, the standard model neutrinos don't leave much of a recoil signal in underground detectors, but what if you have still the neutrinos take, 500 seconds or maybe a little bit less to propagate from the sun to Earth. And then on the way, they can easily oscillate into something, right? And something that, the new neutrino state. This neutrino state can be sterile, well, that's no luck then, or it can be sterile under the standard weak interactions, but having a much enhanced baryonic current, and that's the idea. So if it has a much enhanced baryonic current, it will have a very much enhanced energy deposition through the recoil. And the main point my work in Mars was that even though I will introduce by hand the strong interaction rate much stronger than the Fermi, and you would think that the big neutrino experiments should be able to rule out this possibility. That turns out that the baryonic currents are vector isoscalar currents, are the ones that are not, that the standard neutrino experiments such as SNOW or Borixino and others, that they're just not sensitive to that coupling at all. To set the model, I have and I also should mention that the gauging the baryon number is, even though if you just gauge it, it will have an anomaly with the same model gauge groups, but it's not one of these anomalies that you have to introduce low energy states to cancel it. You can still have a consistent theory with the cancellation of anomalies at the weak scale, or some people like to keep it anomalous. Anyways, this is the model that is the most safest from similar to the kinetically mixed models, where the low energy, say, flavor changing processes in canon or B physics are not able to rule that model out in any way. And so I introduced the new type of, neutrino, which I call baryonic neutrino, and I charge it under this U1. I kind of keep in mind that this U1 gauge poison can be of intermediate mass scale of a few GeV, maybe. And then I couple it to the isosinglet vector current, and that's here. And so I introduce something that is if you allow yourself to shrink it to a point, you get at low energy, you get the coupling of the Bernoulli current to this vector current of neutrinos, and you would introduce a GB constant, which is an analog of G Fermi, and I would be thinking that this is like a G Fermi scale times n, and when I'm taking this n to be on the scale of maybe 100 or so. And then on the way from the Sun to the Earth, well, there are lots of possibilities for neutrinos to oscillate. I'm in particular interested in the range for the mass splitting of these neutrinos that is sort of much lower than for the regular neutrino for the atmospheric delta M or the solar delta M. That makes the oscillation then, in principle, comparable to the Earth's sun distance, and we'll see why that is interesting. So, I guess everyone, of course, knows that the elastic scattering of neutrinos on nuclei is enhanced by the coherence factor A squared. But in this model, what's interesting also that the inelastic cross sections are suppressed by this combination, the energy of the neutrino times the radius of the nucleus to the fourth power, and that's a really tiny parameter. So an overall enhancement factor you have is 10 to the 8, and that's the reason why you can take relatively small scale experiments such as, say, Hogen, and they could have sensitivity to this type of new neutrinos comparable or above the sensitivity of such monstrosities as small over a single. Okay. Skip that details. So this is that I just tell you that I did calculate the kind of effective cross section for the say contribution to the neutral current events due to the deuteron breakup by this baryonic neutrino, and as a result, this is like this the integral over that gives you the overall cross section for producing neutrons. This is a standard model neutron current, neutral current contributions, and these are different choices of delta M for the model that I suggest. With the coupling enhanced by a factor of 100. So the rate here is already blown up by a factor of 10,000, and you're still not reaching the standard model. So just to tell you that the neutrino signal at SNO, for example, the neutral current signal, is only because of the axial vector couplings and the excitation of the deuteron into the excited state of the deuteron. So if the neutrinos of the standard model would be like parity conserving vector current, there would be no neutral current signal at SNOW. Right, so the interesting part that I think Josef will also cover in his talk is the recoil signal of this baryonic neutrino, and it's very similar to the 10 GeV scale WIMPs, and this comes because basically the momentum that you kind of give to a nucleus for a 10 GeV WIMP is and say it's a heavy nucleus, and so it's a 10 GeV WIMP times the velocity of 10 to the minus 3, and that's 10 MeV. And the momentum that you give to the nucleus due to the neutrino is again 10 MeV, because that's the scale of the neutrino energy or momentum for the boron 8 neutrino spectrum. And that's why it's looking very similar. And you can try and see if you get first of all, you can see that these experiments are not worse in probing this model than say Borgsino or SNO. And you can try and assign the excesses of events seen by Frest or Hogen to the scattering of this baryonic neutrino. Now, I should also say that if one day someone will develop the detector based on, say, helium, you would be able to distinguish between the two possibilities. Because if you go to between WIMP recoil and the neutrino recoil, because if you go to, say, if you study the scattering on protons, right, and if you kick it with 10 GeV WIMP, the proton will go only with the recoil energy of a keV, just because it will partake 10 to minus 3 velocity and will go, okay, it will have a kinetic energy of 1 keV. But if you kick a proton with a neutrino that carries 10 MeV momentum, the energy of the proton will be, I have to calculate now. So the energy will be more on the scale of 100 keV, and that's where if you be able to develop the detectors with very very light nuclei, you can really distinguish between the two possibilities. Now, of course, much of the our community is buzzing, is trying to solve the Gamma mystery and. Gamma has seasonal modulation, and on the outset, neutrinos also have seasonal modulations as seen by Super K, but of course the Sun is the closest point of approach to the Earth is in early January, and the furthest point is early July. And then, in principle, this model does allow to flip a phase by a factor of pi, and that's an interesting consequence of the neutrino oscillations being not monotonic. So here's this choice of delta m such that it's commensurate, the oscillation length is commensurate with the length from the Earth sun's distance, and if you what you see here is the boron 8 neutrino spectrum. Appearance spectrum of this new B that originate from boron 8 spectrum. So an overall thing here would be a boron 8 spectrum, but then you sculpt it with oscillation probability. But if you choose the delta M right, you can see that although overall the summer rate overall should be smaller than the winter rate, in the high energy tail of this neutrinos where it matters, you're gonna have more neutrinos coming to you in some.
How do you make that big effect?
It's big. You can make it bigger. You can even make the oscillation of amplitude much larger than three. It's just. Meaning that your zero of oscillation is close to the Earth sun distance for you can actually enhance the oscillation up front. Okay, so this way you can basically try and speculate that some of the angular annual modulation come from that, but of course you have to be very have some ideas why is that. The phase is not really agreeing because Gamma has a maximum in late May, and this thing should have a maximum faster. That's the scenario. It should have a maximum at around 4th of July, 3rd of July. So there's month and a half difference, which I don't know how to explain. And of course, it's also not. In line with what the collision modulations are. Okay, so I'm right on time. I finished the second part. I'm just arguing that direct detection of dark matter signals may be coming from some other sources that we haven't thought of. And it's not like dark matter models have a glorious success of explaining all these anomalies, so we may as well try other possibilities, right? And so this is the idea that I proposed, is that boron 8 neutrinos have a long time to go, and then they can oscillate into something semi-spiral on the way, and that can give an interesting signal through the coherent scattering on the nuclei, and that's not excluded at this point either by Snow or Barresino. And I should also say that this model does have uncertainties because I can play with delta m squared, but it doesn't have uncertainties on the same scale as dark matter has, where you don't know the mass, you don't know what the velocity structure is. Here, at least, okay, you can sculpt these distributions with different delta m's, but you cannot go beyond the boron 8 endpoint. You cannot suddenly say, all right, I have three orders of magnitude higher flux of neutrinos with energies of 20 MeV. That's not possible. So in that sense, this model is a better testable, if you like. It's less of a moving target. And so I think with more data and more work coming in, we should be able to rule it out or test it. That's all.
I think these neutrinos should be Dirac, or it's going to be much harder to cancel anomalies. Then you can give them a big mass.
Oh, no, it's not an issue, because they're very, very light, right? Because I take delta m squared very small with the regular one. So the masses... You can really fit with, masses of neutrinos is really not a big issue. You can have a model for masses with the same right-handed neutrinos sort of coupling to the standard model bilinears and to the this new Higgs times this baryonic neutrino. So the masses are not really an issue. I don't think they have to be Dirac. Oh no, sorry. I'm sorry. The anomaly of triple nu b. Yes. You need another state to cancel that. That's true.
State could pair
that's
up
true,
with
but this state can, right. You're right. Yes.
So how much do you have to tune delta m to actually get the right phase?
Well, we will hear from Yosef, okay. Because he will, it's a big range, right? So if you look at the logarithmic range, of course it's a point, right? But if you look at the range from 10^-10 to 10^-9 eV squared, it's not such a crazy range. It's not a point, right? Depends what your priors are.
Okay, so there are no more questions. I guess we can go to lunch.
Just a short announcement before anybody gets a lunch.